Hi there, social chemist listeners. Throughout this podcast, we have covered various forms of misinformation, from conspiracy theories to pseudoscience practices. In today's episode, we explore a different area of this topic, AI-generated imagery. Chances are you have already heard of this technology, and in most cases, have used it already in one way or another. Depending on how you are exposed to AI technology, one can say this technology will make life easier. On the other hand, some can argue that AI will replace white-collar employees and reduce the value of a college education. Time will tell how AI will impact our lives and our economy. But for now, we'll take the initiative to understand how AI-generated imagery will change our understanding of false information and whether we have the capacity to regulate AI effectively. Hello, listeners. Welcome to this edition of the Social Chemist Podcast. I am your host, Nelson, and today we are joined by Todd Helmis, a senior behavioral scientist at the RAND Corporation. He is a nationally recognized expert on disinformation and violent extremism. He specializes in using data and evidence-based strategies to understand and counter disinformation and extremism. He has studied the disinformation threat posed by deepfakes, Russian-led propaganda campaigns targeting the United States and Europe, and violent extremist groups, use of social media. On today's episode, he joins me to discuss the implication of AI-generated imagery on social media and its implication in the spread of disinformation and conspiracy theories. Todd, thank you for joining me.
Nelson, thanks for having me.
Todd, I want to start our conversation by asking you how your work has influenced how you engage with the online arena. Now, a couple of months back, I had the honor of having Dr. Raquel Martins, who's a behavioral scientist at Cambridge University and the developer of the misinformation susceptibility test. And in that test, it analyzes how people can detect fake news and real news. Now, when it came to fake news, I did a great job in detecting false narratives. But when it came to real news, I had a hard time. And the reason I believe that was the case was because as a misinformation researcher myself, I know that almost everything on social media can be fabricated, and it's very hard to tell fact from fiction. And I feel it's a whole lot safer to be hyper-skeptical about information online than to run the risk of sharing misinformation, disinformation, and conspiracy theories. As a misinformation researcher, how do you navigate with this issue?
It's an interesting question. And I'd be curious myself how I would compare on that misinformation susceptibility test. I haven't taken that. I will say, I'm fairly careful in the online environment. And of course, it depends on what kind of stuff you're looking at. If I'm trying to kill time and look at celebrity gossip or whatever, then maybe the source doesn't matter as much because, well, it's gossip, but you know that. But for real news and things that matter, I try to apply a sniff test to the information. I look at what the source is, and I try to make my own assessment as to the credibility of the source. New York Times, Fox News, Breitbart, or other types, right? Some sources come with a bit more credibility than others. So I think through that. I think about what the story says. And is the story telling me something that makes sense, that is credible to me? And if the more credible it is, then, the more likely I'm to believe it, or maybe the less likely I am to investigate it. And then some things that you see on social media, just, Catch your attention because they're kind of crazy. And, you know, crazy things naturally catch our attention. And crazy things are fun to look at and interesting to follow. But you still have to apply the sniff test to them. So, you know, if I see information online that might offer a tantalizing allegation, then, you know, that's something that I will verify by just doing a Google search. And do I see credible sources also highlighting that? Or not. And if not, then I'm probably likely to believe it's misinformation of some sort.
I think the problem becomes even more complex when we add AI technology, which is what we're going to be focusing on today's discussion. Now, when it comes to AI, the last week or so, I've become to realize that AI is like an umbrella term for a lot of technology. We think of AI, we think of Alexa. There's AI technology. There's AI therapy, for example, that people can download an app and have therapeutic sessions with an AI therapist, which is fascinating. But yeah. When you talk about AI, what aspects of AI are you talking about in the area of disinformation?
Well, with respect to disinformation, there's a couple areas of AI that I think about. One relates to generative AI. And there has been, obviously, over this last year, a significant amount of media attention paid to the really incredible advances that generative AI has brought to us. And there's, you know, two particular types that I think are most interesting. One of the large language models, like ChatGPT, and its ability to generate very lifelike, realistic-looking text, you know, based on a very simple written computer command. And then, of course, the other is these images that we're finding online that just look completely real, not completely, but really real. Things like the Pope wearing a puffer jacket or Donald Trump getting arrested in a melee of cops, right? So those are two types of technologies that I think about. And I also think about more sophisticated deep fake type video graphic content, of which there's a variety of different forms. But the upshot is this sort of synthetic reality that this form of generative AI and other types of AI technologies can create and can be used for entertainment, could be used to fool us, and could be used to undermine an election.
When it comes to the general public, and I don't know if you have the answer to this question, but out of curiosity, how do you feel the general public does with differentiating between real imagery and AI-generated imagery?
So it's a good question. There's been a growing number of studies on this. And my RAND colleagues have looked at this, for example, by examining the degree to which audiences online can determine the authenticity of real videos versus deepfake videos. And those studies suggest that that people are wrong in classifying fake videos about a third of the time. And other studies suggest similar types of rates. A study from 2021 by Matt Groh from MIT, for example, identified that people are accurate anywhere between 70 and 80% of the time. But I will say that the accuracy at which people can detect these types of videos is really dependent on the quality of the videos. And that's one thing that's really unclear from the studies, because there are a lot of fake videos online that one could use to populate these types of studies. And some videos are good quality. In other words, they look technically sophisticated and look technically real. Some are less so and pretty obvious that they're fake. And sometimes the content on the videos just would be sufficient enough to make one suspect that it might be wrong. So I think this is a real moving target.
I'm curious to know how AI will change how we understand misinformation, or whether it will have any significant impact. And this was a question that I kept thinking like an hour before I had you on, because as of this recording, we have the war in Israel with Hamas, and like any big event, there's misinformation that's going to be spread and disinformation. But much of the content that we see isn't AI generated. It's basically out of context images. People are sharing videos from combat games saying that you know, this is what's happening in Israel without the person looking at the video knowing that it's from a video game. And so, I mean, will AI change significantly how we look at this problem, or is the concern the speed of how one can produce fake imagery?
It's a really interesting question. And I think, you know, I personally am just really eager to see how all of this plays out. And of course, I'm interested in doing what I can as a scientist and a policy researcher to influence the debate. But I'll also have my own bag of popcorn at the end just to see how all this plays out. There's a few different ways to think about it. And your initial offering of noting that there's just all sorts of ways that we can fool each other without resorting to deep fakes. And the examples that you're giving are perfect, sort of miscontextualized content or improperly contextualized content that makes us think these rockets belong from Hamas when really they're a video game. Or, you know, the classic example I always say is when the speech for Nancy Pelosi a few years ago was slowed down and made her sound drunk. And I recently heard, I think it was a Tonight Show, that slowed down speech from Donald Trump. It made him sound drunk. So they're cheap. We'll call these things cheap fakes. They're really easy ways to manipulate content to make it look false. Now, the world of deepfake technology is obviously changing rapidly, and it will ultimately change the equation, I think, as to whether or not people resort to cheap fakes because they're easier and cheaper versus deep fakes. Already with generative AI, it's very easy to create pretty decently compelling images. Now, researchers are pretty good at picking out which images are false, because the false images, you know, oftentimes, for example, the shades and the shadows are wrong. AI is having a little bit of a hard time, you know, putting the shadows in the right place. So that can be a tell, but for most people, they wouldn't notice that. So that's really easy to create. And to be honest, I think it would be malpractice for somebody who is really interested in fooling others and sowing disinformation and chaos to not use these types of images, because they're so easy to create. Why not do it that way? It's different for the videos. Videos are a lot harder to create. Videos that are effective, that are persuasive, that look real, take time and effort to create, at least as of right now. There's new generative AI technology that can help create videos, but the videos are very poorly, I mean, it's obvious, like wholly obvious that it's not real. So right now you can't create decent videos with generative AI. You can create decent face swaps with AI, in fact, highly realistic face swapping videos, like the classic video out there showing, oh my God, who's the Top Gun actor?
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. So you can see these are high quality deep fakes, like you see with the deep Tom Cruise videos, but those can take a lot of time and effort to create. And so right now, they're not really an effective means of sowing disinformation unless you have a decent sized budget and a lot of time to create that content. So I'm not worried about that right now. And there are other types of technology as well, but as the technology improves, it'll be faster and easier and more accurate to create this content.
I think that's where the fear comes in, because, you know, as you said, right now, but AI generated imagery is going to evolve. I mean, I think about the computer and how long it took for the computer to be accessible to every person on this planet. That took decades. When it comes to AI generated imagery, I mean, I'm seeing it on Facebook. I'm seeing my friends who are just creating these versions of themselves with ease. And so when it comes to regulating AI-generated imagery, I mean, what does that even look like? And is it even possible?
Well, I mean, it is possible. There's a lot of things the government could do. Let me, before I hit the regulation piece, just let me go back and double tap something. I think it's certainly easy to create these. It's getting easier to create these videos, and it's very easy to create the images right now. and even reasonably easy to create audio. I think there's a bigger question, and is what is the impact of that going to have? Will it change elections? Will an October surprise video completely change the outcome of an election, only to later be determined as a fake? Will these videos cause major interethnic conflict in the United States, like new Black Lives Matter protests that then elicit a reaction from the right? I don't know the answer to the question. I think it depends on how society adapts to this. And we can talk a little bit more about that adaption when we chat about media literacy. But with respect to regulation, there are several things that could be done to address this. Some involve more overt forms of regulation than other types. One question is, there are already moderation controls that some platforms have on their AI systems. I think DALL-E doesn't allow users to create images of Donald Trump and President Biden. And that's a useful safety precaution. So one question, but not all platforms have those types of moderation controls. So one question is whether or not the government wants to get involved in setting a standard for what these platforms, how these platforms can and should moderate the types of requests that people can make for content, or the degree to which the AI platforms deliver on certain types of requests. There's an issue with respect to watermarks. Right now, it's possible to embed watermarks on video, graphic, and photo image content that can be read by computers but not see by humans. Basically, you're basically changing patterns in the pixels. And that would afford an opportunity for, say, Facebook and others or media companies to screen videos to see whether or not watermarks are embedded in it. And if they are, then you can label that content. So audiences know that something is a deep fake or not. So there's a question of whether or not the government wants to be involved in that process by requiring major players to watermark their content, by requiring platforms to monitor and look for those watermarks and then label them. So that's one option. There's another technology, another initiative called the Content Authenticity Initiative. This is an initiative conducted by a number of major stakeholders, from the New York Times to TruePic to Adobe, where they basically provide a way of stamping real videos and documenting that real content is indeed real. They do this by embedding some sort of cryptographic hash marking technology into video cameras or phones. And it basically allows, once an image is taken, that information is recorded, where it was took, by whom it was taken, what location it was taken, and then it records edits to the video, to the content, so that users at the back end can see what changes have been made to the video or photo, and they can have some confidence that those images are real. So there's steps the U.S. government could help with that by A, promoting adoption of that technology, by ensuring that the government is, when it takes photographs, is using this type of technology to document the realism of those photographs, to promoting media and education, to help audiences recognize the value of content that has this authenticity label with it, and then also ensuring that, or promoting platforms and other media companies to have the capability of sharing this type of authenticated information, because right now they don't have that. And then, of course, there's media literacy. Continued research on these topics is critical. And then the last thing I'll note, too, is that there's a question whether or not the government should be involved in providing a license to certain types of AI platforms. So you imagine you have this agency that, when that OpenAI, for example, has a new type of platform, they submit the application to the agency. Agency reviews it, they test it, they evaluate whether or not it meets safety standards, and then, you know, give it a license to operate. So there's questions whether or not the government should be so involved as to offer such licenses.
I want to see if you're concerned with how much AI will evolve, because you named a few interventions, but as technology upgrades itself, it can, what's the word I'm looking for?
adapt and jailbreak?
Yeah, it can adapt and jailbreak. Is that a concern for you as a researcher?
Oh, it's already happening. I mentioned watermarks. I mentioned watermarks, and a new paper by the University of Maryland came out, I think, October 3, so just a couple weeks ago, showing that researchers can remove watermarks from deepfake content, and they can add watermarks to real content, which, you know, if you're able to scale that, means that real videos that come out, you could add a watermark to it, and now all the platforms are labeling this real content as false content. So there's no perfect solution to any of this. I think the key is to combining technologies, combining approaches that try to limit as much variance as possible. So, for example, if a watermarking initiative, even though it can be jailbreaked by experts, but if a watermarking initiative could effectively label 80% of the deepfakes as fake, then that's better than nothing. And you're always going to have highly capable adversaries being able to create high quality content that might undergird any of these safety measures.
That goes back to why I asked if it can be regulated, because, I mean, no intervention is perfect. And as AI technology, as AI generated imagery becomes accessible to a huge population, it becomes almost difficult to regulate. And, you know, when I spoke to Dr. Raku Martins, I remember him talking about false polarization. And I think that's one of my biggest fears when it comes to AI generated, just creating this synthetic debate and just throwing it out there and just further polarizing our society, and which is what we're currently seeing. Like, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
I mean, the polarization piece is the delicate underbelly for this entire field, because people believe, the more partisan people are, the more likely they are to believe information, even if false, but the more likely to believe it if it adheres to their pre-existing views. So, you know, it's like the drunk Nancy Pelosi video. I think everybody kind of knew it wasn't real, but it didn't matter because for a lot of people, it played into their pre-existing beliefs. And so they applauded it nonetheless. And you can imagine that even becoming more so to the extent that folks will create videos that actually look real and are plausible. I think both of those factors are going to be really necessary, I think, for all this to spread. They have to be realistic looking, technologically decent content, and, you know, sufficiently plausible that people will fall for it.
One last question. Since you do have a background in political extremism, how do you think AI will play in the recruitment of people falling into political extremism?
Yeah, I mean, it will. I mean, it's gonna. I think, you know, all these crystal balls that we give ourselves and look through. And you know, just to finish a comment I started to make earlier, I think it's a real question of, like, what is the real impact of these going to be in society? And part of that depends on how society adjusts and responds to this content. I hope that at some point over time that people learn about this content sufficiently enough that when they see fake stuff or stuff that looks not credible, that they'll immediately think, oh, it might be a deep fake, and then discount it. And there will, of course, under even the best circumstances, though, you're going to have highly partisan or extremist people who really want to believe what they believe and really want to believe evidence out there that justifies what they believe, that will be fanboys of this kind of material and to some extent get fooled by it. And again, like, I think it'd be malpractice for extremist groups not to use this technology in some form or fashion. Because it could really help them. So they, you know, from their perspective, I think it behooves them to use this, even though obviously it's bad for society. And hopefully in the end, people don't get hoodwinked by it. And what we don't want to see is for polarization to get worse, for extremism to get worse, for more people to participate in violent extremist movements. I mean, that's really the key issue. As much as some people might get fooled, we don't want to see recruitment rates for these groups go up.
Yeah, and as you said, we don't have a crystal ball, but if we don't act now, things can get worse before they get any better, unfortunately.
Yeah, we got to take steps. I think working to take steps now will be really key for the future.
Yeah, we have our work ahead of us. So, you know, we'll see where we're at 10 years from now, or maybe not even 10 years, maybe 3 years from now, because this technology is evolving a whole lot faster than we anticipated.
GDP I'm curious what 2024 will bring. So I'm not even looking that far out. I'm just curious how things will fare in a year.
I will message you and ask you that when the time comes. But Todd,
all right, that sounds good.
It was an honor to have you on the podcast. If you can tell the listeners where they can find your work.
Sure. I'm on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn. You can also follow my work at RAND Corporation, rand.org, where if you just Google my name, Helmus and RAND, there'll be a web link that summarizes all my work. So you can go there. But thanks for having me, Nelson. I really appreciate this opportunity. Love talking about this stuff. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. It was an honor. And like I tell everyone, you know, thank you so much for your contribution in the area of disinformation. It helps people like me that are studying this currently. So, you know, thank you so much.
All right. Well, good luck with your studies.
Hi there. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. For information on Todd Helmus's work on AI disinformation and deepfakes, you can find his article in the show notes below, titled Artificial Intelligence, Deepfakes, and Disinformation. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, be sure to subscribe and leave me a 5-star review. By doing so, you help expose this podcast to people who might be interested in conspiracy theories within politics. If you're listening on any other platform, be sure to subscribe to get more analysis on a conspiratorial mindset. You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Thread at The Social Chemist. For my newsletter, you can find me on Substack. For this episode, the references can be found in the show notes below. Be sure to share today's episode to have some interesting discussions about today's talk on AI. So with that being said, take care, be safe, and question everything with logic. Thank you.